together with fellow saints and fellow children of yours, and to study your word and to learn more of what we need to know to make ourselves pleasing to you, and keep us on a path that leads to you. If you don't know, no telling where you'll go. We pray that you'll open our minds and hearts and let us absorb all this and put it into our daily lives, and we could be better people and let people know that we've got something better than what the world has to offer. We ask all this through your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Whoa. Okay, yeah, way down. We have one more question on page on fear, page number 8. We didn't have time to do the very last question, so you're on question number 9 on page 8. One who walks this way fears the Lord. What proverb did you have? 14:2. Let's go ahead and you want to read that for me?
Proverbs 14:2. He who walks in his uprightness fears the Lord, but he who is perverse in his ways despises him.
Okay. English Standard Version puts it this way. Whoever walks in uprightness fears the Lord, but he who is devious in his ways despises him. One's outward conduct is going to manifest one's inward conduct, is it not? Let's go to a few passages, or at least one passage, unless you have others. Let's go to 1 John chapter 2. 1 John chapter 2 and verse 6. 1 John 2 and verse 6. Let's see. Ruth, are you there? Oh. Okay, no, I mean, are you... Okay, this is starting out just right tonight.
Whoever says he abides in him ought to walk in the same way in which he walked.
Okay, so if we say we abide in him, it should be manifest by what?
Our actions.
Okay, notice one who walks in upright. So if one's walking in uprightness, can we conclude they're walking in the fear of the Lord as we look at their character? And remember, those who don't fear the Lord have no respect for the Lord. Remember in John chapter 3, did they reject Christ? Okay, because he was the light and they'd rather practice what? Darkness. So again, we have the same situation there. Yes?
I put 16:6.
Well, go on, can read that for me.
Okay, by mercy and truth, iniquity is purged, and by the fear of the Lord, men depart from evil. Now that's just, and I put another one too, 14:16, but I put that also.
Absolutely. Okay. It was brought to my attention, even though I prepared these, that Bob Poulton, you know you can do more than one passage there, and that's true. So both of them would have worked. So if you had Proverbs 16:6, that would have been good also. I was looking for 14:2, but 16:6 would have worked. So, anybody else? All right, let's go to, we got two pages on the tongue. The tongue. So we're on page number 9 as we talk about the tongue. Do you believe that perhaps this is one of the biggest areas we have to work on at all times?
Yes.
Most of us. Maybe not all of us, but most of us. And that's why I believe before we do in the Proverbs, when you go to James chapter 3, when it says the tongue no man can tame. Now, that's not meaning that you got free course to say whatever you want. My understanding of that is this. If no man can tame the tongue, no matter how long you're in Christ, you always have to be on guard of what? Your tongue. You're never going to be able to tame it. Doesn't mean go do what you want, but since you can't tame it, always be on guard, because when you least expect it, you might say something you wished you hadn't said. And I think if I was to ask raise hands, most of us would raise our hands that there's been a time we've said something that we wished we didn't, or we said it in a way we wished we didn't. So again, tongue is a very valuable thing because we can share information with one another. But it's also, when I look at the Lord's church, one of the biggest destructive points in the Lord's church is the tongue. Now, of course, that would be false teaching. That would be one thing. But also, when we look at the tongue, you got gossip, you've got envy, you've got strife, you've got bitter, you know, you've got all these different things, and we have to be careful with our tongues. So we're going to go over a number of proverbs that are quite simple. The first one is, the one who has a perverse tongue falls into evil. What passage? I was looking for Proverbs 17 and verse 20. So let's go to Proverbs 17 and verse 20. Danielle, you want to read that for me, please? 17:20. All right, so I like how it starts out with the deceitful heart. And the reason I like that is because, remember, our mouth speaks as to what our heart is. So if you've got a deceitful heart, you've got to be careful of that. English Standard says a crooked heart. New American Standard says a crooked mind. So deceitful heart, crooked heart. And so again, we have these things. And notice the perverse tongue falls into evil. Because what kind of heart do they have? Deceitful heart. Remember about the deceitful heart. Now, when we talk about deceitful heart, how do you overcome a deceitful heart? Well, by prayer, but remember Proverbs 4:23, keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. And also, let's go to 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 13. 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 13. Jim, when you get there, do you want to read that for me, please? 1 Peter 1, verse 13.
Therefore, fill up your loins of your mind. Be sober and rest your whole fully upon the grace that is to be brought to you in the revelation of Jesus Christ.
The key part that I'm using for this is the talking about gird up the loins of your mind. So if you gird up the loins of your mind, you're going to not have that perverse heart. But if you don't gird up the loins of your mind, we'll go to one more passage and then we'll move on unless you have more comments. Let's go to Luke chapter 6 and verse 45. Gary, you want to read that one for me, please? Luke 6, verse 45.
Out of the abundance of the heart, his mouth speaks.
Beautiful passage, because that shows that someone said, well, you can't judge my heart. Well, this passage teaches that we know the condition of your heart by what? What you're saying. What you're saying. So if you're saying those things that are not good, it shows that your heart is not what it should be. You know, remember, Jesus said, you praise me out of your lips, and then you blaspheme. Man who was made in the similitude of God, going back to James chapter 3. So again, that's inconsistent. So we have to be careful of that. Anybody else on number one? Question number one. Yes, Ruth.
I was just going to say, this part of emphasizes the connection between one's internal character and external outcome. Because if you have a deceitful
heart. Absolutely. So again, I can't judge the heart as to everything that's in it, but your tongue is going to give yourself away. And we're going to see a lot of this concerning the tongue. Question number two. This type of tongue is described as a tree of life. Okay, 15 and verse 4. Let's go ahead and read that. Susan, you there? Okay. Now, what I did on my notes on the side, on my separate paper, I've got in bold letters for me to remind myself and you, our words have the power to heal or to hurt. And I'm going to give you an example of that in the Old Testament. Let's go to Numbers chapter 13. Numbers chapter 13. Remember, this is where they were going to go into the land of Canaan. And Tammy, I'm going to have you read both of them for me since it's right there. So in Numbers chapter 13, Tammy's going to read verse 30. This is Joshua and Caleb, 13:30. Listen to his tongue. We are well able to overcome it, right? Okay, so again, and of course, that be towards the tree of life because they're going to get the Canaan land. That so where we are. Now look at the next. Now go ahead and read the next verse, 31.
But the men who had gone up with him said, we are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we.
And of course, can read more that they talked about there. Okay, we are not able. Verse, we are well able. That one word led over 600,000 people to die in the wilderness. And it all came from what? The tongue. And what's really interesting on that, when they were told to go spy out the land, they were not told to spy out the land to see whether they would take it because God's already told them, I'm going to give you the land. He's already told them that. So I don't know why the 10 took that position, other than, my opinion, they looked at it from a fleshly standpoint instead of a spiritual standpoint. You say, well, these guys were bigger than us. Yeah, but weren't these the very same people that were led by Moses to cross the Red Sea? Wow. Did they forget that already? Yeah. Oh, and by the way, they crossed on dry ground. Now, when I lived in Florida, they emptied a lake. They emptied a lake by the hospital because they were doing something. Do you think that lake bed was dry in a day? It took a long time for that lake bed to dry, and it was a small lake. Now, when they crossed the Red Sea, and you know, you got the liberal theologians saying, well, it really wasn't that deep. Well, if you read the account, as the Egyptians came, what happened to them? They drowned. So it had to be enough water for them to drown, was it not? So it was. So think of the faith it took those people when they saw that sea being held by nothing that they could see. That you had a wall of water on one side. You had, you know, I love water for baptism, but I used to hate when Jake lived in clear water because I had to always go over a lengthy span of place where there was water on both sides of me. It would have taken every ounce of faith I would have if there was a wall of water and I didn't see what's holding it up. They did. They walked through that. But then shortly thereafter, they were convinced by one word, not. Do you see how I included that with, here's the tree of life, we can do it. Here's the other, we can't do it. Right? Anybody else on that question? That's right. I've got a lesson I'm working on. I don't know if I'll ever give it or not. A lot of lessons I start and I never get, but on Numbers. Book of Numbers, book of complaining. Because they just one after another after another. It makes me laugh. It's not funny, but it just shows how we misuse our tongue. All right, let's go to number 3. What proverb? A fool does this. Okay, 29:11. Martha, are you there? You want to read that for me, please?
A fool vents all his feelings.
A fool vents all his feelings, but what does a wise man do? Holds them back. I want to focus on feelings. We would all agree, all of us have feelings, correct? But what I have on my notes, we've got to control our emotions, which would be feelings, because if we don't control our emotions, what won't we control? Our tongue, right? And that's easier said than done. I can control my feelings now in this setting, but has there ever been people who've made you upset, made you mad? Has there ever been people that purposely try to make you mad? I've got to watch my emotions. I've got to be careful how I respond to that, because I could respond in an appropriate way. And that's why the tongue no man can tame, because, you know, you're faced with these different circumstances on a regular basis. And this is a simple one, but I'm working on it. I have to watch my emotions driving. I despise when someone tailgates me. I would probably be better to just get rid of my rearview mirror, where I can't see someone behind me. Because when I see someone tailgating, I get more preoccupied with that than I do my driving, and then I become a bad driver. But people get worried, and I'm not saying I've done this, thank God. I'm not apologizing that I've gotten out and done something stupid. But you have to watch your emotions. My wife has slowly tried to teach me when I think someone has driven very foolishly and they decide to pass me, I used to want to stare them down. She said, quit doing that. That's not the actions of a Christian. And you know, she's right. But there's a side of me, and I'm not justifying. I'm not saying this to put my, I apologize that I have to work on this. But she has helped me on this, because it's a very simple thing. I can't wait till I catch up to them and look at that, because I want to see what a fool looks like. Well, I have to watch that, because if windows roll down, I got to be careful I don't roll my window down. And then you have an exchange. Now, I haven't gotten into that, so don't take this illustration that far. But I'm just telling you, we have to watch our emotions. And one for me is driving. That's why when I go to Disney Springs, I like to get there before, well, there's always cars there, but get there before there's the mass of cars. I get there before the thing opens, so I can go get my business done and come back. You say, well, why you go to Disney Springs? Because there's a spice shop there that I like their spices. But again, do you have that dealings too? Not us gonna be driving. Do you have to watch your emotions? We have to be careful on that. Sometimes brethren get heated one with another. That's just a human reaction sometimes. That doesn't mean either one of them are bad people, but on those situations, what do you have to watch? You have to watch your emotions. If you're going to say something, you better just think a little bit before you say anything, because you probably say it in a way, say something you didn't want to say. My problem is I might be saying the right thing, but I speak loud. In fact, my wife's been having to deal with that for over 50 years. Shh, shh. Yeah, I just speak loud. I guess people think I'm being aggravated. I'm not aggravated. That's just what I do. And when I get excited, guess what? I speak louder. So we're walking down the street, and she's telling me, you know, quiet down. She don't say that word, but let's. And I'm like, Susan, nobody's got their windows open looking to what I'm saying. And to me, I'm not speaking that, but I have to watch that. Because here's another problem. Not only should we say the right thing, there are some people who are going to take offense by how you said, even if you did say the right thing. So that's what we deal with in life. And that's the tongue. I'm glad I have a tongue, but I got to keep an eye on my tongue. Maybe you don't. You're different. So I've got that number three. Control your emotions. You'll control your tongue. You don't control your emotions, you're probably going to mess up with your tongue, right or wrong. And you say, well, we all mess up. Well, yeah, but then we have to try to correct how we've messed up, and you can never fully correct some of those things. Yes, David. That's a good thing. Absolutely. Think twice. The trouble is, that's good when things are going smooth for us, but do we think twice when our emotions are up at bubbling? And that's when we should be thinking twice before we speak. You know, I could go into the home, I could go into the family, I could go parents and children. You know, as kids come up to teenage years, it's just because they become so smart as they become teenagers. You've got to you've got to watch your emotions on that. All right, anybody else before we go on? Yes.
Of course, the book of Proverbs tells a lot of things that a fool does, but also in the list of verses you gave, 18 and verse 2, says a fool has no delight in understanding, but he does have delight in expressing his own heart, which I think is his own opinion.
Yeah. And a lot of people like to do that. And we'll talk more about, I think it's one of our questions later down too. All right, question number four. Did I jump ahead of myself? Okay, number four. This type of individual walks with a perverse mouth. Proverbs 6:12. All right, let's go ahead and look at that proverb. Joe, are you there?
Yeah.
You want to read that? All right, he's using the King James because I went there. I've never seen that before, naughty person, because I. And I think we can parallel a naughty person is a worthless person, you know, and we have that. So what I put here, oh, I asked for this class, I said, let's also read 13 through 15. So I'm going to go from your version, Joe. I'm going to go to someone who uses either the New King James or English. Okay, go ahead.
13, he winks with his eyes, he shuffles his feet, he points with his fingers. Perversity is in his heart. He devises evil continually, he sows discord. Therefore his calamity shall come suddenly. Suddenly he shall be broken without remedy.
So what's interesting here, you have this person, and then 13, 14, 15 describes this person as to what he's doing, what this naughty person. Now, that doesn't always happen in the Proverbs. A lot of times the Proverbs are isolated one of itself. But on this occasion, it goes on and discusses this. Have you ever met somebody who likes to always stir up the pot? The older I get, the more I dislike that. You know, it just... And you say, well, it gets people, their blood flowing. Your blood don't need to flow like that. Your blood will flow in many different ways than that. So, again, I told you of a good friend of mine years ago. Good Bible student. I'm glad he was a member of a different congregation than mine, but when he'd visit me, I'd want to strangle him. And I told him that after class. I said, you know, you make me want to just come to your pew and strangle you. Because I know what you're bringing up, you don't believe. But he liked to kind of get the audience going into these different directions. I said, if you honestly believe that, then I can see you bring up the question. I said, but I know you. His name was not this Joe, but his name was Joe. I said, Joe, I know you don't believe that. And you know you don't believe that. I'm just having some fun. No, you don't have fun at my expense as I'm trying to teach the class. Now, if you generally believed what you were bringing up, okay, you're right to bring it up. So he was one, I'm not saying he went exactly in that, but he created problems. You know, he just, and you can do that in almost any Bible class. You know, any those of us who are Bible class teachers, that teacher who's teaching and you're in the audience are probably going to teach it just a little bit different than you. True or false? They're still going to teach the truth, but they're going to teach it. So I've got to be careful as a teacher also that unless my comments are really relevant to what's being said or really relevant because what that person said doesn't fit the scenario, then speak. But most of the times I don't speak because, yeah, what he said is right. I might have said it differently, but what he said is right. And you got some people that because they didn't say it the way that they think you should say it, they create what? Create difficulty. Now, I'm not suggesting we all enjoy people commenting in class, but not commenting to the point. Had another friend, preacher. Preachers are the worst at this. Had another friend, a preacher, come visit us in Illinois one time. And good man, great gospel preacher. But every other sentence I said, his hand was up. Finally, I said, halfway through the class, I said, Ken, do you want to teach the class? I'm surprised, yeah, but he didn't. He said that. But the point was, he was bringing additional thoughts, but that wasn't the direction I was going. And you're there, you're visiting for 1 week. Be quiet if that's what you're doing. You don't have to teach from the pew. Let the teacher teach. Now, I'm not saying that you can't speak. Don't misunderstand me. But have you ever met somebody that every few minutes their hand is up? That's horrible for the one who's teaching. It really is. And it's horrible for the class because you don't get anywhere. So we have to be careful of that. Okay, let's look at the next one. This brings sweetness to the soul, number 5. 16:24, pleasant words. Kirk, you want to read that for me, please?
Proverbs 16:24, pleasant words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the bones.
Okay. When I seen this honeycomb, I was thinking of the Saddlers, but it just... and my wife loves honey. I'm not a honey person, but she loves... Maybe that's so... I'm so cranky, I don't know. But when you think of honey, you think of something that's soothing, do you not? Something that's going to be refreshing. So key is pleasant words are like a honeycomb. We're in a society that likes complaining. Likes complaining. And trust me, there's a lot of things we could complain about. But if you never have pleasant words, you know, I don't like talking to a person, oh, it's nice out today. Well, so far, it's good. I don't want to be with you. You just go on your own. Yeah, it might rain, but it might not. So I'm going to enjoy what's happening right now. Right? How are you feeling? I'm feeling good now. Well, yeah, if you get 30 years, you might not be feeling good. So if you're feeling good now, enjoy it. Because there's going to be a time you're not feeling good. Right? So, you know, you don't need words like that. You need pleasant words. Have you ever seen someone who has berated their child to the point that they don't get any pleasant words? It is really sad. I saw that as I was growing up. Not in my family, but a close family to us. And that poor girl, she could have been the valedictorian. She came one behind. That's, I think, the salutatorian. Is that the... She came... And the dad just was beside himself. She was heavy. Okay. Joined the club. I wasn't heavy then, but she was... That's all they talked about, her weight. Talked about if she didn't get, you know, always something to pick on her. I really felt bad for her. Now, she was a smart student. She went to college and got her degree. But she sure did. Now, her mom was different, thank goodness, or balanced out. But her dad, I'm sorry, he was useless. His words, he had no pleasant words. Now, you don't want to go the other way and put your kid on a pedestal that you're going to have to cut down later on. But you've got to have pleasant words, too. You know, I tell parents when they have teenagers, some of the best years of my wife and myself in life is we enjoyed our kids as teenagers. Now, I'm not saying there weren't a few knocking of the heads a few times, but it was a wonderful time. But some people go into those teenage years and the negative frame of mind on how horrible they're going to be. Like I said, one of the things about teenagers, all of a sudden they got that wisdom and you have to show them they don't have that wisdom. How you go about it, we'll talk about that when we talk about raising kids. But you got to be pleasant. All young kids are bad. No, not all young kids are bad. In fact, a good bulk of the young people are good people. Now, they need training, they need guidance, they need, you know, but they're good people. The class that's held here, the teenage class, I sat in one. It was amazing. Those men did a good job. The students that were in the class were participating. That was a very good thing. Now, on occasion, are young people going to make a bonehead decision? Yeah, they are. Even the best of them. But you remember when you were a young person? You ever make a bonehead decision? But did you make some good decisions? So we got to be pleasant too. Now, not 100%. If they need to be corrected, you correct them. But give pleasant words. All right, anybody on that one? Yes, go ahead, Gary.
Is this saying that a honeycomb has helped the bones?
Well, I like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health. I don't know. What I'm fearful of what you're going to say. I'm going to let Tammy and Mike answer that. So, all I know, people love honey, and honey does a lot of good things. I wished I liked it. And I can get it from them. Don't go by these variables. Buy the good honey. All right. Last thing on honey, since you brought it up, your fault. She went to get her car oil change. Oh, I bought some honey today. I said, what? We have the person who makes it comes here. Oh, it was their honey. No, you buy it from the actual owner. You don't go out to some store and buy it. You let them know. Sorry that you'd missed a little bit of the profit there, but... Paula, yes, ma'am, I'm ignoring this side. I'm sorry.
Another one of yours was 12.5. Anxiety in the heart of man causes depression, but a good word makes it glad.
Right. And we're going to have that. So let's talk about that one now. We have a lot of depression in this society. We really do. A lot of people, sad but true, think that the only way out is to commit suicide. And that's really sad also. I don't know what goes through a person's mind. How depressed you have to be to get to that point has got to be overwhelming. But even taking a step back from that, we sometimes have depression that we have to deal with. But a good word makes it glad. What I've learned, I have learned something over the years. When I was in my early 20s, my favorite saying... when someone was depressed. And by the way, this is not the right way to do it. When I was very young and someone was depressed, my favorite saying to that person, suck it up. That don't help the depressed person. That is the dumbest thing I could say to that person. I've learned I don't even basically have that in my vocabulary anymore because... I don't know what they're going through. You know, I don't have all the answers because people are depressed for a whole variety of reasons, sometimes legitimate, sometimes self-brought on. But the simplest answer is you don't tell a person to do that. That's not going to help in times of depression. I can't say many times I understand. Because if I'm not dealing with what's causing them to be depressed, I'm not going to be saying something that's going to help them. Because the first thing in their mind, how do you understand? So that's another thing. Yes.
So the problem that we have in our society is that we're sending out this message that no one can handle that depression or that anxiety without being on some sort of medication, some sort of drug.
And that's sad. Now, I want to add what you said there, too. A person who is godly and religious can get depressed. Understand that. Old Testament characters got depressed, did they not? So, again, it does not take away that you're not a faithful child of God because you've gotten all of a sudden got depressed. We all get depressed. It's how we get out of it. It's the good words. Thank goodness for my wife. She's helped. That's why I'm glad I've got a godly wife. Because she can spot things that some others maybe don't spot. And she can catch it earlier and deal with it. And I appreciate that. That's a good thing on husbands and wives. I'm talking about depression. Depression is not something to say, well, I'm a Christian. I don't get depressed. You're lying to yourself. Yeah. The key is the good word, God's word, and how do you get out of it? And sometimes it's a physical thing, and I've learned on this too. Sometimes it's a chemical imbalance that maybe you'll need some medication on that realm, and I have no problem with that anymore. Again, when I was in my 20s, I had all the answers for that. And now I don't. I know it's an issue we deal with. I know God will give us the way out. I know we need to surround ourselves with people who are going to help us move forward and not backwards. I know that it's not going to be easy. You know, you lose a spouse. I've never lost a spouse. There's probably going to be heartache the rest of your life and a portion of you concerning that situation. I don't understand that. Now, we lost a small child. Now, my wife understands that more than I do because the mom is usually much closer at that age than I was. You know, and the worst thing, and you know, would that be depressing? Sure it would. That was our first child. I mean, she was in one hospital. Our son was transported by airlift to another hospital. She's in one, and she's in the hospital with the others who are with babies in their hand, no baby in her hand. And he's in another hospital, and he lived for 6 weeks, and we were there daily for 6 weeks. And it was, I'm sure, to this day. She remembers things about that I have totally forgot. There are some things that are going to stick with you the rest of your life. But thank be to God, the help you get from others, the help most of all you get from God, if you take that course, it's going to be better. We had some family members say, well, if they heal Jason, then I'm going to serve God. No, you don't barter with God on situations like that. First of all, that's what means you're blaming God, and it wasn't God's fault. It's we're human beings, and life happens, and bad things happen. That's the furthest I'm going to go into that. But some people get bitter. After they get depressed over something they have, they get bitter. And even some Christians get bitter. And that's sad because we can get out of it if we follow God's way. But there'll always be a crack in our heart on these various things. That's not going to go away. But hopefully you can use those examples to help others in your same condition. That's the beauty part. I see they're going for the first or second bell. Okay, then we're going to stop here. So circle number six.